All right, good afternoon. How is everybody?
Great.
Doing well? Fantastic. As David said, my name is Greg Mittleider. I'm going to be giving you a high-level overview of all the resources and essentially like the, which takes into account the tools and things that we're going to provide you. We don't necessarily just give you the curriculum and leave you on your way. We have an incredible support structure, most of which is supported by yourselves. So, you know, kind of a overarching goal of this weekend is that all of you in this room will kind of connect and coordinate, and you'll be great resources to each other. Once you leave here, you can go ahead and communicate with each other, and I'll show you some of the channels that we have to do that and accomplish those tasks. The first thing I want to start with here is cs50.ly/questions. If you have any questions throughout my presentation or any of the presentations throughout the next couple of days, feel free to ask them there if you are not able to ask in the moment. For example, you know, if something is just flowing along and you don't want to interrupt, or if, you know, 10 minutes later something hits you from before and you kind of want to jump back to that, go ahead, place questions there. We'll try to get to them as promptly as we can so that they can be addressed timely within the same day or maybe in the same session or the session following and whatnot. But that's a great way to kind of tally all that up. And this will be CS50 resources. Essentially what I'm going to talk about is CS50 in a box. We're going to give you a whole bunch of resources and tools, as I had just mentioned, but it's a metaphorical box. It's not a little package we're going to send you. There's too much there. It's all digital, so it's kind of like a virtual box. And this session, which will be about 40 minutes or so, is going to be the proverbial drinking from a fire hose. And I believe this, if memory serves me right, I read this a long time ago. I think this was actually the freshman water fountain at MIT back in like the 1970s. This is obviously a joke, right? So before I get rolling here, I told you I'd do a little bit more formal of an introduction. So first off, I'm not going to call out anybody if you haven't taught computer science and this is the first time that you're diving into this, or if you've been teaching for an excess amount of years or whatnot. So without asking that, we do have a great situation this time around because we've invited back a lot of teachers that have been here for sessions in the past that have come back now, so they'll be a great resource for you for the weekend. So because that is public knowledge, I'll ask you all, who is present that has been to a workshop before? Okay, so whoever has not been to, leave your hands up. Whoever has not been to a workshop, kind of like gaze the room and see who you might ask questions for, because you'd be surprised, there are going to be a lot of questions that you do have that'll be obscure questions that, you know, things like, what if I live in an area that gets a lot of snow, therefore school is canceled a lot, what if I get derailed from the sequence and how do I handle that? So those types of questions are probably best answered by somebody who's gone through this before. You know, we could definitely try our best to answer those for you, but again, you yourselves are great resources. So a little bit about myself. I used to teach computer science in the middle school level. I actually, graduating high school, I had no intention of ever being a teacher. It never even crossed my mind. And I went into the world of finance, and that's actually where my background is. I have a bachelor's degree in finance and worked in the field. However, the 2008 meltdown was ugly for everybody, not just folks in the financial industry, but everybody. And I had opportunities to go back into the field, but I really had to sit and take a long look at myself as to what I really wanted to do for the rest of my life, and kind of assessing everything that I've done, where I had started and where I had got to, decided that I wanted to take the step and I wanted to teach because I felt that I was better served going into the field of teaching finance and potentially law. Even though I didn't have a law background, I had enough going through my undergrad of finance that I thought that I could teach a little bit of high school law and whatnot. But that's what I wanted to do. So I went back to school and I got my teaching degree to teach finance and potentially law, but in the state of Pennsylvania, where I'm from southwestern Pennsylvania, the certification that you earn to allow you to teach anything business related is also wrapped into computers and information technology. In the state of Pennsylvania, it is near impossible to get a teaching job. So upon graduation, applying for jobs, there weren't necessarily finance jobs available, but I was qualified to teach this computer science position, which I did apply for, and was accepted to teach 7th grade Microsoft Word, Excel, and PowerPoint, which was not really the course that I was looking for, but it was there, right? So the first year that I did it, I was so just happy and excited to have a job because jobs were scarce. This was a great opportunity, and working with the kids was fantastic. But after the first year that I had done this, I realized that, you know, these students, because they have access to all these other technologies from a younger age now, iPads, things of that nature, Microsoft Suite is fantastic to know, but they fly right through these things. So I would just breeze through the curriculum. The students were getting it. They kind of were disengaged, not because the things weren't interesting, but because they could learn them so quickly. So a couple of my colleagues and I decided to look into more things that we could do. So we decided to go the route of offering some kind of computer science. And one day, one of my colleagues came into my room and I was teaching Microsoft Excel. The students were working. I was done with my spiel. And he said, "You got to see this thing." And he sits me down at my desk and he pulls up Scratch from the actual MIT program. And I'm kind of like looking at it, what is this, right? I had no computer science background at the time. So I'm playing around with the little puzzle pieces and we're making the little cat move, and we put a bat in there and we made the cat chase the bat. And so I tell my students, say, "Stop what you're doing." And threw up the link. I said, "Go here and play around with this." And they did. So they did that for the last maybe 10 minutes or so of class, and the day ended. And I came back the next day, the students come in, they say, "Hey, can we do that thing again?" And, you know, not really, because it just wasn't so significant, I said, "What thing?" "The thing with the puzzles and the..." "Oh, okay," so we did it again. And then the next day, we did it again. We kind of got addicted to it until we got about 2 weeks in, and I realized that I was going to get fired, right? Because I'm not teaching curriculum that's approved by the school board and such. So I was talking to my colleague. He's like, "We got to go talk to somebody." So we did, and ran down to the office. We talked to the principal. We talked to the superintendent. And they said, "If you can find curriculum for this, or if you can write curriculum for this, go." Okay, so we did an emergency situation as I was kind of like making up things day to day. But what I did is I reached out to the computer science department at MIT and said, "Hey, you created this." It was actually Mitch Resnick and his team over at MIT, some of you may be familiar, said, "You created this, do you have any curriculum?" And I sent the email blindly. I obviously didn't, I had no connection, didn't know Mitch Resnick, whatnot. So they actually got back to me very quickly and they said, "Yes, we created it, but we do not have any curriculum currently. However, this gentleman over at Harvard named Professor David Malin, who does use Scratch in his course called CS50. So here's me, not knowing anybody. So, "Dear Professor Malin, my name is Greg Mittlatter. I'm in southwestern Pennsylvania. This is where we're at. This is where we want to be." And kind of just laid it out there as to what we were trying to do. And he responded back fairly quickly again. So here I am, southwestern Pennsylvania. Like, "Yeah, this is great." And he got back to me. He said, "Hey, I love what you're doing. Matter of fact, I'll one-up you. We're creating this thing called CS50 AP. We're going to have our first cohort, our pilot cohort, in the summertime. This is roughly November. So next summer of 15, we're going to be in Seattle, Washington. Would you like to come out?" I said, "Yes." So I went out there, and much like many of you, just the same as many teachers that come to these workshops, I kind of felt out of place. Because I was there with, you know, there were teachers that had PhDs in physics or people that had been teaching computer science for 25 years, and I'm the new guy on the block. But what this all proves is that, you know, anybody can get through the course, anybody can kind of adapt and move along, because accessibility is one of the things that we do talk about in this course. And so therefore, you know, I continued plugging away, and over the years I grew my relationship with the CS50 team. I started traveling independently. I was still living in southwestern Pennsylvania. But I would go to like San Diego, for example, and I would give a portion, like a session like this. And eventually, David actually just asked me to come on full time to staff. And that's kind of where I've been for a year. It's been about a year and a month now that I've been here. So it's been a great experience, and I know exactly how all of you feel, right? And that kind of keeps me in tune with the thoughts and the questions that you have. So that's me, right? So now let me tell you about what we're going to provide for you. And all the things that apply to the students, like accessibility, community, et cetera, like I said, they apply to yourselves as well, but on a different level. Where accessibility will come into play is, as David had said, things like, do you have to have prior knowledge of computer science in order to take the course and whatnot? But that also applies to, do students have actually physical access to these things? For example, when I was teaching in southwestern Pennsylvania, I had a student who lived exactly 200 feet from the end of where Comcast, which is the cable company down there, provided internet service. And they would not run a line to his house, so his mother would have to take him to the local McDonald's, and you'd have to sit there for hours and hours to do not only things for my course, but other courses. So accessibility in that regard is not always just like, you know, what is your knowledge going in, but it could be the physical constraints. And there are ways to get around this. Maybe I don't have all the answers, but maybe some of you do. We were just in Arkansas a few weeks ago, and this came up a lot. We have down there, they have areas where there's, you know, situations like that. Maybe somebody doesn't have internet or somebody doesn't have access to something, but they figured it out. We had everybody in a room and we kind of talked through it, and that's kind of how these things stem, which ultimately builds culture. Because as I'll show you, we want you all to come together. If you have a question on the fly, not today, not tomorrow, 5 months from now, not only can you reach out to us, but you can reach out to each other. And David explained rigor. Obviously, you want to maintain the rigor. That's kind of what gives us the oomph to what we're doing. With this course, we give you the two options of applying the course. You can either adopt or adapt. Because that comes along as one of the most prominent questions is, like, what do I do? How do I do it? Where do I do it? Well, if you adopt the course, it's essentially taking everything that we give you and applying it as is. And the best method that we see with that is for adopting is kind of like a flipped classroom, where the students will watch the videos on their own, come into the classroom, and then the teacher will facilitate that as a, what we consider here, like a section. So you'll be working hands-on with the students. Obviously, you won't be giving them answers to the problem sets and things of that nature, but if they have questions about how this works, how that works, you can work with them. So that's probably the best way to go about adopting. And adapting is what I did. I was teaching at the eighth grade level. All of this was new. So obviously, you know, I'm not going to put rock star status on myself and say that I got eighth graders through the full Harvard CS50 curriculum as is. But what I did is I took pieces and parts, and I laid it all out for the students, and they gave us a year's worth of material, and the students were far more ahead in their lives of computer science than they were when we had begun, which is kind of the overall theme here, is not where you are compared to everybody else, but where you are compared to yourself. So grading tools that we're gonna provide you. A lot of time that is taken when teaching computer science is grading, because you have to manually go in and look at these things. But, and so just to give you a heads up real quick, there's probably no need to take notes, because we're gonna get really deep into these things over the next couple of days. I'm just talking at a high level, just to give an overview. But Check 50, so there's no need to like remember exactly what Check 50 is or what Style 50 is, but Check 50 is gonna auto-grade for correctness, essentially does the program work? And there are corner cases where students can hard code things and whatnot that'll make it work, but it's not really correct, so you can go in and manually fix those scenarios. Style 50 is a tool that we're gonna provide for you that auto-grades for consistency with coding. So you can look at our style guides, this is the kind of what we expect. Maybe you hold yourself or your students to a certain level or whatnot, but it's definitely a guideline that will help you. Render 50 is a great tool because if you're an old school teacher and you kind of like to see things on paper, what you can do with Render 50 is print out any section of code, like any of the programs that the students will write, into nice little PDF formats. You can print them out on paper and you can kind of look at them with a pen and a paper if you use different colored pencils or pens for certain things that you're grading. Also, it's a great tool because since you know, the screen may only be this big, but the code is this big. When you're scrolling back and forth, it gets confusing, but when you have it on paper, you can kind of lay it out and see the whole thing at one time. CS50.me is it's a platform that we're gonna provide for you that has two aspects to it. Student-facing, it's gonna allow the students to keep all of their work nice and neat and in one place. They can see their grades, they can see comments that you send to them via GitHub, and it kind of it creates like a nice little place for them. On your side, it allows you to manage your classes essentially like we do sections. So I taught what would be considered 11 sections. I did like an A-day every other day schedule. I had 5 classes one day, 6 the other. And at the time, this didn't exist for me, but what I could do with it now is I could create my 5 set, like section 1, section 2, section 3, and I can keep the students of just that class in that little section, keep all their grades, I can make all of my notes, I can pass back and forth comments to them, et cetera, et cetera. Vault 50 is, there's nothing computational there, it's essentially just accessing all of the answers as to what we feel is the best solution in our eyes. Obviously, you know, there's 1,000 ways to skin a cat, so it's whatever you feel or whatever level of you know, wherever you feel your students would be, but that's the solution that we will provide you. And you'll have access to all of them for all of the PSETs. Compare 50 is new. That's a really cool tool because what it's gonna do is it's going to allow you to check for plagiarism. It'll compare the students' submitted work against thousands of other submissions elsewhere. And we use it here at the college, and it's incredible because we tell the students every year, we'll catch you. Like, if you know, do not plagiarize, and they still try to do it. But it will catch them almost every time. And the best thing about that tool is it continues to get better and better and better, and it finds anything. If you've used it before, I don't know if we've rolled it out yet. Aaron would know. Aaron? Okay. Whenever it goes out to the AP teachers, if it has not already, you'll see that it is going to be a wonderful tool. We're going to provide you the CS50 IDE, which is the environment in which the students will work, and we'll provide this for you for free. This is based on Cloud9, but Cloud9 itself is a developer tool. So we actually have we'll give you your own workspace that is adapted for CS50, which kind of eliminates all the super high level things, and it gives you exactly what you need in order to run your course. But that's where the students will work. That's where they'll submit all their work, et cetera, et cetera. It's free of charge, thanks to Amazon. Amazon actually just recently acquired Cloud9, and we had a gentleman on staff a few years ago that actually built the platform that we use there, and he now works for Cloud9, who has since been bought by Amazon. So that's a pretty cool connection that we have. Reference.cs50.net is going to provide you like a simplified manuals page. It's going to provide you in-depth descriptions and examples for everything that happens within the course. You can print them out and give them to students. I've heard of teachers that give these to students in like a packet form. And so if you're talking about a certain topic, it'll cover like every subtopic within there, and they can kind of flip through. You don't have to go to that extent, but it is available. Obviously, you can reference it online without printing it up. The CS50 online community is what I was talking about. We have many different platforms, but the biggest one going right now is the Google group. And especially talk to somebody that has been to one of our workshops in the past. They'll know exactly how to access this. They'll tell you like all the fun things that happen there. And if you ever ask a question there, you'll get an answer like that. It's pretty great. Droplet is one of our new tools that's coming out. And it's really cool because when we transition from scratch over to a command line environment, one of the most difficult things is getting the students to wrap their head around using blocks and then actually writing a command line. But what Droplet will do is it'll take a block language and it'll switch it to C and back and forth. So you can kind of toggle back and forth. You can build a few blocks and then see how that actually is portrayed in the language of C. And then you'll have access to widgets like the binary bulbs, et cetera, which we can provide online. You can manipulate the bulbs by clicking on the bulb itself or typing in a number, and it'll show essentially what David was doing here with the cell phone. So that's just it's a cool thing to do with the students to show them how binary works and to introduce like transistors and such. cs50.harvard.edu/AP is where all of our content lives for the AP course. You can get any of the resources we have there, our curriculum. You can sign up for things of this nature, like the workshops and whatnot. But anything that is applied directly to AP lives at cs50.harvard.edu/AP. We discussed the AP Google Discuss group. The Sandbox is a really cool tool that we're going to demonstrate for you over the next couple of days. It's a learning environment, much like an IDE, but it runs whenever you release the cookies, everything goes away. So you're not building files and whatnot. It kind of like lives independently. You can work on a quick assignment. You can run a quick program. And then once you delete it, everything's gone. So it's good for getting the students in, maybe doing like a quick warm-up exercise and whatnot, and getting them ready for the day. CS50 labs are going to be little short programs that the students will run, but they're going to be side by side where the students can kind of follow along step by step as they're building something. For example, if they're building Mario, it'll say like, all right, now we need to implement a hash, and you do it, and then okay, step, and you kind of do it. It just kind of keeps everything nice and neat, and that'll be great for the students as well for walking them through some of the problem sets that are in the labs. Debug 50 is a great tool that we will describe. It's what it'll do is it'll provide the ability to kind of give you very explicit hints as to what is wrong with the code, how to fix the code. Obviously, when you see it, it'll make a lot more sense, but we have a team that has gone in and found out like a lot of the corner cases, and they write it out in plain English as to, you know, what the error might be, as opposed to if you've ever used a general terminal, and then at the bottom it'll give you like this much information just because you missed a semicolon somewhere. The lectures. We'll provide you with all the lectures, and we're going to provide notes and transcripts to those lectures. And we provide videos that are excerpted topically. So for example, if David has a lecture that's 2 hours long, we'll break it down into maybe like 5 minute, 10 minute segments so that you can look at just the pieces that apply to what you're teaching for the day. And so this is an example of a lecture. This here is a part of our video player that we have built specifically for this course. I'll give a quick demonstration, but just visually here, what we're looking at is kind of like a picture-in-picture up in the top left-hand corner. And the picture in the top left is going to be David's computer. So, you know, David does a lot of walking around during the videos. So if you're trying to like pause at the right time so you can see a certain thing that's on the screen, this will allow you to kind of keep the computer up there at all times while you're watching the video. And that itself, you can manipulate. You can make it bigger, you can make it smaller, you can move it, et cetera, et cetera. Over here, we offer the ability to expand this little accordion menu, and it gives you a breakdown of all of the topics that will be within the video, and you can click on them and it'll take you exactly to where in the video that will play out. So you don't have to watch the whole video and hope that you don't miss something. If you're looking for get in, you literally click on get in and it will take you exactly where he talks about get in. Even more so, we can dive deeper and you can actually search for topics. For example, this one here is condition. Every time that David says the word condition within a certain lecture, you can go in and find the exact minute and second of where that is. And then you can kind of do your search that way. Practice exercises, the code examples and slides. You're provided with all of the code examples and the slides that David does use in his lecture, so you can use those in your own classroom. You can use them to give them directly to the students or for yourself so that you can kind of model your lesson after that. Shorts are an extra condensed topic of their videos that go deeper into maybe something that's only covered topically or for a short period of time within the lecture. So we figure out of like a 2 hour lecture, if David talks about get in for, this is just pure example, if David talks about get in for 1 minute out of 2 hours, we could potentially provide a short, which is a second video, where we could talk about get in for 20 minutes and get very specific with it. And we have an example here. Doug is talking about IP address. So maybe David covered this very topically, and then Doug kind of gets into the nuts and bolts of IP addresses. P sets will provide you with all the problem sets that we do use. Like I said, we will also give you Vault 50, which will give you the solutions for those. And curriculum mapping. So because we are endorsed by the College Board, we will provide you with all of the curriculum mappings that you will need in order to map those to your curriculum as well. CS50 Explained is another tool, which I'll show you in just a moment. It also works like the picture-in-picture, but what it is, it's David and Doug via, what was the name of that show, Mystery Theater 3000? So they sit there and they, at certain times where these little gray dots are, the two of them will comment on the actual lecture. And the weird thing in the middle there, that little sphere, is our that's our virtual reality, like the 3D where you can put on the headset and you can actually like look all around, and it makes you feel kind of like you're there with David and Doug, and I believe they feed you popcorn. Walkthroughs, Zamyla is our famous walkthrough host, and what she does is she kind of gets into all the problem sets, and she walks a very fine line where she'll cover absolutely everything you need to know without giving you the answer. It's pretty fantastic. She's world famous. Everywhere we go, people always want to meet Zamyla. So CS50.tv is where everything lives that is even outside of the AP website. So anything that we've ever captured over the last 10 years or so lives there. So if you're looking for information from 5 years ago, 6 years ago, it lives there. And you know, why would you do that, right? Well, maybe you yourself took the course in 2016, and then you fast forward to 2020, and you're trying to explain something to your students, and you watch the current lecture, and it, you know, you just think, that lecture that I watched in 2016 kind of hit home with me because I was learning it at the time. So therefore, you could, rather than trying to, you know, put yourself into the 2020 lecture, you can go into 2016 and pull it back as you remembered as you were learning it. And maybe that will help you in your delivery to your students. Seminars. This is something that's really cool. We do this here at the college where after the semester ends, it's kind of like the course ramps up throughout the semester, and then the students do their final project right at the end, right before we go to break. And then there's kind of like a, like, what do we do now, right? Because now they have all these tools and all this knowledge, and they just want to like kind of take it to the next level. So we provide the opportunity for students to come back in January and kind of like, do presentations or work with founders and things of that nature. So that would be really cool in your environment. Maybe this would be applicable like towards the end of the year, or I've heard a lot of, if you finish it, CS50 AP in 11th grade, and then you have the students that are now 12th graders kind of expand on things. These are, as David explained, these are the problem sets that we provide at the college level. So we have 9 of them. And what we do is we offer you a lot more. So not just having these 9 problem sets, but we give you a lot more smaller and quicker problem sets to allow the students really dive deep into this material. So as you can see here, these are the problem sets that you will have access to, and there is plenty to go around. Academic honesty, kind of talked about that with Compare 50. That's one of the toughest things to address. And what we find at the college is it's not necessarily that students are vindictive or, you know, there's any bad nature there. That's almost never the case. Generally what we find is that there's time pressures. Maybe there's a sporting event or something and somebody was up late and just didn't have time. So maybe they make a mistake that by taking some code offline or something of that nature, trying to take a shortcut just because they feel that time pressure. So, you know, we tell the students that we will catch them, which we do, but you know, we also offer an opportunity for students to kind of like say, if they do it within a short period of time, if they say like, you know, I made a mistake, please let me go back and correct myself. They explain, why they made the mistake and whatnot. And like I said, it's almost always a scenario like that. It's never just flat out cheating. It's almost never just flat out cheating. Which is another thing why we allow the ability to, like, especially if you adapt the curriculum, to extend it out longer. So you definitely don't want the students to feel time pressured in that sense. If the students feel like they're under a crunch, you can definitely extend time periods. You definitely will not loosen up the rigor, but you know, say if something is due by the end of this week, you know, and it's a hot week for testing in another course or something of that nature, please, by all means, feel free to allow the students a little bit of extra time. There is no reading that's required for this course. However, these books that are up here, Absolute Beginner's Guide to C, Programming C, How Do Computers Work, and Hacker's Delight, are great resources should students feel inclined to read them. Obviously, they go from lesser experienced to more experienced. And then Events in a Box. David touched on this at the end of his session earlier. But what we'll do is we'll provide you with a little box. This one's actually a physical box where we'll send you things for a puzzle day. It's great to hold a puzzle day before the semester begins, like maybe just before school begins, if possible, or the first week of school. And what you'll do is you'll bring the students in and they'll take on the task of accomplishing puzzles that have really nothing to do with computer science, just a matter of problem solving. Because at the end of the day, CS50 is not about just learning pure computer science. It's about problem solving and seeing problems in a different light. And Puzzle Day has the effect of building community right out of the gate, because you get the students to collaborate. They know who they can go to throughout the semester. They build friendships, relationships, et cetera, et cetera. The CSRT Hackathon, which we do highly encourage, we do it here for 12 hours the week before the fair. We go from 7 p.m. to 7 a.m., where it's kind of like the last culmination of the students that have built these relationships throughout the year. The CS50 Fair, the following week, is where the students can show off all of their final projects. We invite friends of industry, we invite former students, et cetera, et cetera. So there's about 2,000 people that attend our fair. Even though there's only, well, I wouldn't say only, but even though there's a roughly 800 students in the course, about 2,000 show up to our fair. So the hackathon is our experience where it's just the students and staff members. So that's their last time. A lot of the students, that's where they work on their final projects. That's where they kind of just hang out. There's a lot of food that's issued. So if you do hold a hackathon, you know, great opportunity to get some pizza, some popcorn, some soda, et cetera, et cetera. We do a photo booth, which in the past used to be a big production, but we've actually simplified it down to, I believe, like an iPad. And there's a way to do it very, very quaintly. And we could talk to you about that over the course of the weekend if you have an interest in figuring that out. And then, of course, the CS50 Fair is the end of the year opportunity for the students to present all their projects. We have visited high schools in the past that do this. I was just talking over here with Tasha about, she's from Ohio. We have a colleague that teaches in Ohio. Angela Yake, and she does a fantastic job with these fairs, and I believe some of our staff has gone every year for the past 2 or 3 years. The coding contest is an opportunity for students to collaborate with other students at other schools. We do kind of a global puzzle day, but here you can coordinate with schools that are local within your state, within your county, or even if you want to cross borders, you can definitely do that. We highly encourage it because, again, at the end of the day, it builds a community around CS50. These are pictures from our friend in Ohio. And you can see, like, they hold this in their gymnasium. It's a fantastic event. People come out. They actually get local sponsors of companies that, you know, maybe give a $50 donation or $100 donation, whatever the denominations are, to support food and things of that nature, which, you know, it works out great because it doesn't put a heavy burden on the school itself. Plus, when the community knows that these things are happening, they get excited about it because the students that are in your community are rising to this educational level. The computer science principal's mission overall is essentially to get more students, particularly those not naturally drawn to computer science, interested in the field. We've seen that since even our CS50 AP course has come out, and, you know, more importantly, the AP CSP exam, that computer science education in schools seems to be exploding at the moment. The CSA exam is Java-based. There were roughly 30,000 students that took the CSA exam over 2011, 2012. However, the 2016-17 year, 60,000 students had taken it. So it doubled in just that short period of time. So if you figure over the time since school has been existing, and then in just that short period of time, the CSA exam itself has taken off. The CSP exam, there were actually 50,000 students that took the multiple choice exam on the first go around, which I believe is the biggest like initial offering of an AP exam ever, which is incredible. And it's only going to continue to grow and get bigger and bigger. So, you know, the overarching goal here is just the mission is computer science for all. And that's it. So what questions do we have at the moment? If you had questions, you send them to the cs50.ly that I had given you at the beginning. But are there any questions at the moment?